Give us your take on what's happening right now over these last couple of days.
Yeah, well, it's a frenetic pace. It's very it's unpredictable because we're trying to schedule things. You know, if cases or bills don't settle, we try to reschedule them, and sometimes on the same day. We're planning to meet on Saturday in conference committees. We may even be having evening sessions if we build up enough bills that resolve in terms of resolving the differences between the House and Senate. So it's a volatile process in the sense that, you know, it's unpredictable. I guess that's probably the better word, because you can't go, there's no committee hearing scheduled. It's, you know, you do these conference committees at the discretion of the chairs when there's not resolution. And then you go on to the floor to pass those bills if there is resolution. So it's kind of not a predictable process, but it is an intense process because what we're trying to do is actually iron out differences between the House and the Senate.
And obviously the differences between the House and the Senate are what everybody's sort of watching right now. And, you know, sometimes that gets a little drama filled with everybody like, what are they going to do? What are they going to do? But it's really part of the process, right? This is how you get to good legislation, right?
Right. Right, right. It's, you know, there's compromise on most of the spending bills. You know, if I want to spend $10 and you only want to spend $5, you figure we should be able to compromise on those. And we do. But oftentimes there's specific policies where it's not, you know, it's not like the ability to compromise on numbers. So you have to figure out whether you can support one side or the other without doing any injustice to what your separate house has voted to do. So it's not a predictable process because those policy type bills are hard to sometimes come to agreement between the two houses.
Where is the biggest differences right now between the major pieces of legislation remaining?
Well, probably one of the bigger ones right now is the Department of Transportation. You know, that's the agency that we fund road construction, bridge construction, all kinds of rural infrastructure for the county roads. And there seems to be a significant divide between the House and the Senate in terms of how that infrastructure gets funded. And so those guys are going to be meeting several times a day, I think. That's what I've encouraged them to do, to work out those differences. But essentially, the House wants to increase the gas tax on North Dakota families and small business owners, and the Senate is trying to resist that. We don't think it's necessary to raise the gas tax. We don't think it's necessary to borrow money, but that's an area where I'm hoping we can come to some compromise.
Sorry, go ahead and finish.
No, I finished.
Okay. One thing, you mentioned the borrowing money before. Help me understand that. You've talked about the differences between the property tax proposals, the relief packages in the House and the Senate, and you've mentioned before borrowing money. I brought that up to the governor and others, and they're like, I don't know what you're talking about. What do you mean by borrowing money? Where would their package in the House require the state to borrow money?
Okay. Well, let me clarify for you. If you go to the Governor Armstrong's budget address to the legislature on the opening beginning of the session, he proposed to borrow $300 million to build our state hospital. He proposed $120 million of borrowing to fund improvements to the Fargo, Dickinson, and Grand Forks airports for a total of $420 million. Now, his proposal, what he said in his message, was $460 million of borrowing. The Senate has not agreed to do any of that borrowing. On the House side, what the House is proposing to do is, this is in their DOT budget, they're proposing to borrow $155 million to fund 20 miles of highway construction on U.S. Highway 85, and they're proposing to borrow $100 million to help fund infrastructure for the Southwest Water Authority. So a total of $255 million of borrowing. As I said, they're proposing a gas tax increase of $70 million by increasing what your gas tax, your state gas tax, by 21%. So those are the items the Senate has been resistant to.
And does it make sense to borrow at any point for those larger infrastructure projects? I assume what you're saying is, look, if the property tax tab is X plus your, have those needs to bond for the projects you mentioned or quote unquote borrowing, that, you know, we can't do both. I think that's what I hear you saying, right? So,
right.
For the taxpayers, when you're building a state hospital, should you be paying for that all in one tranche, or does it make sense to borrow that and spread the cost of that over several bienniums?
Well, it's a great question. I can only tell you and compare what we did last session. Last session, we had approximately the same $2 billion of discretionary dollars. We did not borrow any money. We did not raise anybody's taxes, yet we still built the same amount of infrastructure that we're wanting to build this time. And so I think we can do it. Now, I support borrowing under a number of different scenarios. One, where the interest rates are down, you know, like when we borrowed for the Fargo diversion, it made total sense because that project was so large. I mean, I'm talking more than three. Our state share was more than three times the size of the state hospital. But the interest rates were down, and it gave us the ability to fund other large water infrastructure projects without the Fargo diversion sort of, you know, going into the trough and taking up all of the resources. So that totally makes sense. But, you know, when you have $2 billion of surplus discretionary dollars, you can do $450 million of tax relief. You can do a $300 million hospital. You can even do part of Highway 85, which we agree, I think both sides agree, part of that needs to be done. But there's a 6-mile stretch that's over $100 million, which is sort of a sticker shock for a lot of people. Is okay, we know we need to do it, but can we do part of it in this session and part of it next session, like we do a lot of projects?
Give me an update on the difference between the property tax bills. We talked earlier when there was a proposal to go down to $12.50 from the
Sure.
proposal from the governor. I saw on the conference committee you actually went up to $16.50 for primary residents. I assume that came at a cost of extending that cap on the floor. Where are you at with that right now?
Well, the Senate is at $16.50. The House is at $15.50. The other significant thing that the Senate did is we removed – the House is proposing that if you have a voter-approved mill levy, so in other words, you have a $2,000 tax bill, and but $500 of that of your tax bill on your primary residence was because of a voter-approved mill levy, you don't get any relief for that. And on the Senate side, we said, no, let's just start with a clean slate. Look at your tax bill. Our version is if you're the value on your house is $200,000 or more, you're going to get the full $16.50 regardless of the skin in the game amendment. The House is still resistant to the skin in the game concept. They don't like the legislative intent, but I think they'll probably come up to $16.50. So perhaps we'll get there. But you know, as we've talked on this subject in previous conversations, it's all a very fluid situation because we're trying to – bottom line is we're trying to balance a budget. So however much we spend on tax relief, that means that we've got to make some cuts somewhere else. And so all of those things are going to happen probably in the last 1 or 2 days of session, but we'll get there.
Explain your concept on skin in the game. You've been very strong on that from the get-go, which would essentially mean that nobody gets to zero, that everybody will pay some property taxes. Why do you feel so strongly about that?
Well, not every there are a lot of people who will get to zero. As I just mentioned, so if you've got a $200,000, your home is valued at $200,000. We know the average tax liability, this is for an average home across the state of North Dakota, is about 1.1%. So if your home is valued at $200,000, 1.1% tax liability, that's $2,200 in property taxes. At the $1,650 and the 25% skin in the game, you'll get the full $1,650. But the skin in the game is designed to have some fairness for other classifications of property tax areas in the rural areas where their tax will be wiped out, and they feel like it'll be a lot easier to vote for bond issuances and school mill expansions if not everybody's on the same footing and paying a little bit of taxes.
Anything else you want to say on the property tax battle and the differences on the House and Senate before we move to a different topic?
No, I think we're fine. I mean, it's a continuing, it's a give and take process. So I'm pretty confident it's a priority for both sides. So I'm pretty confident we're going to get a great package.
That's good news for North Dakotans. Property tax relief is coming, just a matter of the details and what form it'll be in. So that's good news. Hey, we're at NDSU today, and the Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins is here. We're headed for Grand Farm.
Yeah.
We do a Grand Farm champion every week, and you are it this week because they're super excited about not only the big day here today, but really about what's happening in the way of ag tech. You were with Kevin O'Leary last week. He talked about three things: the opportunity for North Dakota data centers and stranded natural gas powering that. He talked about ag tech, and he talked about UAS and drone space. Why should North Dakotans be excited about technology and agriculture?
Well, first of all, you know, it's our leading industry and always has been and will be for a long time. I mean, it's one of those things where we can leverage what we do well now and export that expertise to other states that are big ag states. And so what Greg Devine is doing down there at Grand Farm is really exciting. You know, today, with the help of Senator Hovind, he's bringing in the chief technical officer for John Deere and some others that are big players in the ag sector, ag manufacturing. And for us to be able to attract that expertise and that industry to North Dakota is a big deal.
What most excites you about what they're doing at Grand Farm, specifically with the autonomy and its role in agriculture?
Well, it's one of the things it's going to do is allow our farmers, our rank and file farmers, to be more productive. Over the Easter weekend, my niece is married to a farmer in Minnesota, and the folks for John Deere were actually coming to his farm to observe and witness an autonomous tractor. And you know, we sit out here in Bismarck trying to solve things like workforce. It's a big challenge. It's one of our biggest. And the ag community is no different in terms of not being able to get as much human capital as they can to be productive. And so I myself would be interested to see how these autonomous equipment runs. You know, you see them down in Arizona and Phoenix, the vehicles that go around, shuttle people around, taxis without a driver, and it appears to be working. At least that's the observation I've had, and to see that type of technology come to agriculture is pretty exciting.
You know, I don't think the legislature gets enough credit for leaning into things like this and critical investments that then spark private sector investment as well and matches. And there's some real visionary projects going on right now. I mean, the Presidential Library is a good example. Grand Farm, obviously a good example. I was at Grand Forks yesterday, what's happening with Grand Sky and that whole space. And a lot of that doesn't happen. And you heard this from Kevin O'Leary last week saying, keep doing this because what you're doing is attracting world-class talent to North Dakota. But that starts with literally decades of work and investment of the taxpayer dollars into these projects. Am I right?
Yeah, and yeah, you mentioned Kevin was out to visit with us last week, and it's, I mean, it's not a complicated business strategy. We in North Dakota should try to leverage our natural assets that we have here. You know, he mentioned the one with natural gas. We have an abundance of natural gas, and in fact, you could say we have too much natural gas because it inhibits oil production. So we have that. Up at Grand Sky, we have unrestricted airspace that we can use to fly unmanned aerial vehicles and test them, which is important. We have in Grand Farm somebody with a passion, several people with a passion, including Greg Devine, Senator Hoven. They're all driven to say, hey, here's a place where this is the heartland of the ag community. This is a place where you can test and develop automated technologies to improve productivity and to help solve part of your workforce problems.